I think one of the most important things is to have a very clear goal. Have this somewhere out there goal and keep walking towards your goal. Don't go off course. Tiny actions every day get you to where you want to be. That's how success works.
The Perspective Podcast is fuel for your mind and creative grind. Each week, we break down the art of healthy hustling, overcoming the inner critic, and growing your creative business. What's going on? You're listening to episode 185 of the Perspective Podcast. I'm your host, Scotty Russell, the Perspective Collective, and my mission is to help you grow a fulfilling, profitable, and sustainable creative side hustle. At the end of each episode, I plug a listener of the week, so stick around to figure out how you can get a permanent shout out on a future episode. Let me ask you, is there something right now you're interested in pursuing? Does the thought of it having to be perfect or it potentially not resulting in anything hold you back from getting started? Wouldn't it be a shame as you're in your final days and you looked back on this moment and you were like, damn, why didn't I take my shot? Today's guest is someone who pursued his interest, built his brand, reputation, and craft slow and steady over the years to the point where he's a household name in the world of logo design. I'm talking about my UK brother from across the pond, Ian Padgett, which you may know him better as Logo Geek. He has a fascinating story of how he grew his side hustle into his full-time dream job of logo design while growing a die-hard Twitter community of like 100,000 people and a tight-knit Facebook family of around 10,000 people around it. So in today's episode, Ian and I go deep on leveraging your day job to fuel your dream job, not having to be perfect to get started, creating a routine system for yourself to thrive in, preparing to make the full-time you leap. That's an important one when we get to talking about that and tips to build up for it in case that's your position or where you're trying to go. And finally, we talk about just not dying with regret, the love for logos, and so much more. If you're ready to get started or take the next step in your side hustle pursuits, you're going to find a lot of gold baked into this episode today. But before we get started, this episode is brought to you by our friends and family over at Retro Supply. They're the leading provider of Illustrator, Photoshop, Procreate, and Affinity design resources to make your work stand out in a fraction of the time. So take advantage of 20% off with my never-expiring promo code SCOTTY20 through the special links in the show notes or my Instagram bio. And thank you again, Retro Supply. And again, you can find a link to this full entire episode containing all the links and references in the show notes on your favorite podcast listening app. It's because of you sharing the show that this show continues to grow. So if you find value in this episode, can you do me a favor by sharing a screenshot or a video of you listening or working to this in the background? Make sure to tag me as well as Logo Geek on this one so we can connect and we can reshare the love back. As always, keep an open mind and act on anything that inspires you today. Let's go. PC family, today on the show, we have my brother, Ian Padgett, aka the Logo Geek, on for the very first time. Welcome to the Perspective Podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, Scotty. I'm really honored to be on, and I can't wait to catch up and speak to you because it's been a while. I think since we last spoke, we've both gone full time. So I'm looking forward to this chat.
Yeah, so much has happened. Yeah, you had me on your podcast, it was like last November. And I think the day we recorded, I'm like, yeah, I just lost my job. It was like a week after losing my job, you know, I'm like, know what? I'm going to go full time and just do my thing. But here's my compliment to you, sir. So anybody who's watching the video, you know how big of a Pokemon nerd I have been growing up. And this dude has like Ultra Balls, Great Balls, Pokeballs all over his t-shirt right now. So I would love to commend you for showing up just swagged out and dripping in some Pokemon.
Thank you. I'm slightly obsessed with Pokemon Go. I play it every day. So yeah.
That's hilarious.
Pokemon t-shirt has to be worn.
Fun fact, I had to give up. Pokemon Go was the last video game I played. I've given up all video games. I like stopped playing games for a while, but then that came out. I started picking it up, but I had to quit it. It was the summer of 2016, right when it came out, because it was holding me back from getting the podcast out. I said in like April 2016, I was going to do the podcast, and I kept putting it off because I was scared, imposter syndrome. And then Pokemon Go came out. I'm like, oh shit.
you know, I'm just going to go play this all day. And finally, I'm like, this is holding me back. I got an August 12th start date. No more Pokemon Go. And I haven't played a video game since, but I'm giving myself permission at the end of this year, after a full year of being self-employed, to get a Nintendo Switch, and I'm getting Pokemon Sword and Shield.
Yeah, you should. I think it's good to have a little bit of downtime. As important as it is to work hard, I personally don't agree with like Gary Vee's hustle, hustle, hustle mode. I think it's important to chill out.
It's smart hustle over here, man. I did the Gary Vee style and I burnt myself out. It's dangerous doing that.
Yeah.
We're pacing ourselves here, man. So for those who don't know about you, give a brief Wikipedia page summary about yourself.
Okay, so I'm a graphic designer, and most people know me online now as Logo Geek. Logo Geek is something that I started about 8 years ago on the side of a full-time creative director role, where I was working on like web design and stuff like that. But about 3-4 years ago now, I went part-time with Logo Geek. And as of March this year, now it's my full-time thing. So I design logos and identities for clients. I have a podcast about logo design. I have a community about logo design. And basically, I've got to a point now where logo design has pretty much become my entire life. Something that started off as a bit of a hobby, a little bit of fun, is now a real passion project that, you know, it's my full-time gig. So I'm lucky to be in this opportunity.
I want to get to like the shift of leaving the day job and setting the runway and tips and advice for other people who be in that position. But before we get to that, why logos in the first place? Why design in the first place? And like, how did it happen of like, oh, I'm really interested in this. I'm going to make time, carve out time outside of my schedule and then just pursuing something on the side without knowing what it's going to result or turn into.
This is probably quite a big story, but I'll try and condense it down. So I've always been into art and graphic design, and I was quite lucky early on when I was about 19, 20 to get a graphic design job without any qualifications. But on the side of my job, I've liked to work on like just projects just for fun. And early on, that used to be like CD artwork. I've done movie posters, all sorts of bits and pieces. But when I was in my early 20s, I started volunteering at this club in Swindon, founded by the council in the area. And it was set up by a couple of guys who were animators. And I worked with them. We collaborated together on like a computer game project. And that was like a long-term fun project. It was an iPhone game. And it's the type of thing where you just build it, you put it out there, and you hope that it makes some money. But they were originally animators. Then they started building apps and games. And we collaborated on this project for almost 4 years, kind of on and off between lots of different things. And that just got me used to going to work and coming home and working on some kind of project in some way. But it was at the end of that project that I just got to a point where I just felt so exhausted doing a full-time job that was very demanding, and then coming home and working, you know, every evening, and it was tiring. So I kind of thought to myself, no more side projects. At least nothing of that scale anyway. And a couple of weeks passed by and I wanted a project again.
Only a couple of weeks. So you had the itch. So you gave yourself some time away.
Yeah. And I was talking to my partner at the time about it. And she actually said to me, Ian, you're really good at logo design. It was something that I did a little bit of in my job at the time. I'd done the logos on those game projects, and it's something that I really enjoyed. It had a nice balance between like something I did at my job at that time was like technical illustrations of medical products, and I really enjoyed that. And I always enjoyed projects that was a little bit more complicated than just doing a drawing. And I felt like logo design had that balance between, you know, all of those things that I enjoyed. It had the illustration, it had the technical aspect, you know, and like understanding the brief and communicating it in some way. And the main thing with logo design at that time, my first thought was, oh yeah, this is like a nice, easy project. I could take one on and after like 2 weeks, it would be done. And like I said, it was something that I really enjoyed in my full-time job, but because that was primarily like a web design job, we had logo projects come in, but they would be like once every 2 or 3 months. And every time they come in, I really enjoyed it. And then like 2 or 3 months would pass. And then I'd feel like I have to learn this new skill again. And prior to more recent times, any project I did at home was just for fun. There was no big plan of going freelance or anything like this.
Monetizing it with the pressure of doing that, you know?
Yeah. No plan or anything like that. So early on, I just started working with friends, with family, and it eventually grew and grew and grew to the point where I had loads of inquiries, telephone kept ringing, and I just really felt torn between the two things, between a full-time job and this thing I built. And I got to a point where I eventually took the leap.
So like, when did you officially label yourself as Logo Geek? And were you even monetizing
your
work from there? Because like for me, Perspective Collective was just, I guess, an alias, a moniker for me to just like hide behind and just posting my artwork on Instagram. Like I wasn't monetizing at the beginning. It was just, I didn't like the name Scotty Russell Designs. So I went the more perspective route. I like alliterations and rhyming. So it just worked for me at that time. You know, when did Logo Geek come about? I want to build out this timeline is basically what I want to do.
Okay. So after I came up with this idea of working on logo design projects, it just happened that in my full-time job, I was at that time like lead graphic designer working for a web design agency. And there was also a team like right next to me in the office that were like a search engine optimization team. So just sat there in the room, you hear conversations, you pick up stuff. And I knew I needed a website.
What year would this have been? Sorry to interrupt you.
Probably about 8 years ago.
So like 2012, around that time?
I guess so, yeah. So I needed a URL with logo or logo design in it because I would want to work to rank this to show up on Google. It's irrelevant now, but at that time, if the keyword was in the domain, so if you got basically logodesign.com, you would probably rank right away for that word just because it's the exact domain match. But that's different now. But anyway, so at that time, I was looking for a name to use for my website. And I wrote down hundreds of names, all these different names. And I sat down on 123 Reg, and I needed either the .co.uk or the .com. And every single thing on my list was taken. It was driving me nuts, to be honest, because I had all these really cool ideas and they were all taken. It's different now because we've got more domains now. There's lots of things available. So I think it's easier now. But at that time, if the .co.uk wasn't there, it's like, can't take it. And I think it was like on the bottom of my list, I had Logo Geek. And I am like, that is not going to be there. I almost didn't check because I thought there was no way Logo Geek is going to be there. And it was available. I wasn't sure if it was the right thing, but I thought that's a cool domain to own. Even if I just own it and sell it on at some point, I just registered it. And yeah, so that was kind of step one. That's where the name came from. There was no like bigger plan. It was just available and I registered it. Then after that, I threw what I would think now is like a rubbish website together. I pulled together the bits and pieces that I did personal projects because I couldn't use any of the stuff that I did at the agency. So none of it was that great, but I thought, you know, and this is just for me. I'm just going to put on there what I've done and created a logo for myself. And at that point it was like this little light bulb thing. It was horrible. But I put this website together, wrote some quick content. I put a couple of blogs on there. It was full of spelling mistakes. So I wasn't even that good at writing at that point.
It's like my life. I'm the typo.
So yeah, I threw it all on there. I started mentioning that I was doing logo designs to friends, and I think I might have posted it on Facebook. And I had like an old school friend get in touch. He was starting his own little thing, and he needed a logo for that. And just did it cheap because, like I said, this was just for fun. I didn't really need the money because I had a full-time job. I just wanted something to work on. So I think I did that for like £50. It was really cheap. And then I did some other bits and pieces for friends, and then that extended to very old work colleagues I haven't seen in years needing something. And those projects were a little bit more serious. And then each project I did, I put on my website.
Would you build out like a case study for people each time, or was it just like, here's the final thing?
I think at that point I might have just put the image online. To be honest, I might have done a really quick case study, and sometimes, I can't remember when I started doing it, but sometimes I would write a blog about like the process. So what I was doing just for myself.
I ask because I'm trying to like plant these little seeds of someone else getting started.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, this was mainly for me. The website had spelling mistakes on it. There was nothing special about it. I didn't think anyone would see it. And then out of the blue, just one day, someone I did not know, sent me an inquiry. And I hadn't ever anticipated that this would happen. And yeah, I replied. I took the project on, and it kind of planted this seed that this is like pocket money, you know? It's like extra money that you're not expecting.
How much did you charge for that first like non-acquaintance?
I think
logo?
It was like £100. It's not much money, but ooh, I mean, it was
small.
It was £100 that you could spend towards,
I get it, man, I get it,
a day out or a holiday or buy a games console. Like I mean, it's like, now if it was you could pretty much buy a Switch with that. It's a lot of money. Yeah. If you don't expect that you're going to have it. And like a logo design project, I only took on that one project in my free time. I didn't take on, like, now here today I work on a number of projects simultaneously, but then I had my full-time job and this one shiny project at home. So go to work, come home. There wasn't any stress. I just, you know, did it one, like an hour or two in the evening, do that over a couple of days and put something together. I think what I sent then versus what I sent now was completely different. I think it might have almost been just like putting a JPEG image together, putting the logo in and sending that over. It was something a lot more basic in comparison to what I'm doing now. But yeah, I remember sending it over, they liked it, paid for it, done. And it was a nice, easy project. And with each project I did the same thing of putting it on my website, putting a case study together. I think early on, I would also post it on a Facebook page. I didn't have my Twitter account. I don't even think Instagram existed then. It was just post it on Facebook. Done. And it was a gradual thing. So I never put too much focus on it, but I would gradually get more and more inquiries.
So it was like literally a slow and steady scale.
Yeah, it was a slow and steady thing. And I think what really made a difference was when I started Twitter. And I know here today, Twitter's not what it used to be. It used to be like one of the main ones, but something that I started doing, like I said early on, that I would post things on Facebook a Facebook page, and that never really did anything. But I liked finding resources and sharing it on Facebook. And in my full-time job, they hired someone that I ended up managing, who was like a social media expert. And she started doing this thing where she would post, and she did that whole hacky follow unfollow thing, which is really spammy. But I wanted to try the tactics that she was using on Twitter at work for my own stuff. So I started doing what I was doing on Facebook on Twitter. And quite quickly, I grew a fairly decent following. And I think it was when I got to about 8,000, I got invited to be on the jury for something called Transform Awards. And what this company did, as I was a judge, they put my logo on the bottom of their website and put a link on it. And this link was on every single page of their website. And something weird happened with my website. It went from being, I thought no one could find it, to suddenly it literally jumped to page one of Google for like half a day, for a minute second. And I suddenly got all these inquiries coming in, and I'm like, the hell's called that? And I saw this spike in my traffic, you know, in the analytics. That was a big moment. And I put that down to those links being on that website.
Like, what year would this have been now? So it started like 2012-ish.
It was quite early on. So it was maybe 2 years later.
2 years later, you really started seeing like the big ROI of you just like putting some time as a hobby into something.
So I didn't really do that much. It was just now and again. So sometimes I did nothing for a period of time, but then sometimes I'd be like on a holiday and I just have some chill out time. And sometimes I just like to write, and I'd sit there and write a blog or something, and I put it on my website. So there was the occasional little thing that I did. And it was really that moment when I saw that spike.
That was that aha moment. Like, oh my God, this could be something.
Yeah, this is like, I could actually rank on Google. And it really just made me realize, okay, if I use all the stuff that I'm learning in my full-time job, I was at that agency for about 10 years. And I was in a director role eventually. But when you're doing all the marketing for the company, including the online marketing team, you just pick up so much stuff. And and I got really into it. So I started learning, I started reading blogs about online marketing and all that sort of stuff. And as I was learning, I was gradually just slowly doing it to my website. And anytime I just got a little bit of time here and there, I'd tinker with it and make tweaks. And I'm still doing that today. You know, it's just sometimes there's bigger changes that I do, but in general, it's been very small, gradual steps.
Exponential, small, compounding changes, not drastic. And that, I think that's really what I'm trying to drive home here while I'm plugging at these questions, is just to show like this is a slow and steady grind full of pacing yourself, slow iterations, and revising and figuring out new ways of expanding over time. It's like a slow scale.
Yeah. And one thing I would say with like my website, at the beginning, that content was bad, but you can tweak it. You know, you can rewrite it. You can change it.
Mine was trash too.
I paid people to proofread and stuff like that over the years. So it gradually changes and you gradually add things, you gradually tweak things. You know, with like my social media audience, I made it a routine because I saw the value in having a routine that every day I would post something.
That's huge right there. Routine. Fit something into your daily routine and your process.
Yeah. So I did little things to it every day. So whether that just be post something on social media, or it could be write a sentence for that page. I'm still doing that today. I made it it's just become part of my life. Yeah. So
it's in your routine. It becomes normal once you've like fit it in. And the early days of like Twitter, what were you just sharing? Like little tidbits of like your logo process, a new logo, and then like resources of someone else's stuff? Or, you know, what was the value, whether it was entertainment, inspiration, or educational, that you were sharing that people like sunk their teeth into quickly?
I can't remember who I picked it up from. It might have been like Gary Gary V or someone. I read somewhere or I saw somewhere or something, I can't remember exactly where, but I picked up some knowledge that you can post things from other people and you kind of gain kudos from sharing it. So every day I would just search for some kind of content to do with logo design. It wasn't what I created. It was just curating logo-based information. I've read loads of articles about what people do, where they write their own description and stuff like that. But I didn't do any of that. I just went out. There was a handful of sites that I knew had good blog posts. So like Creative Block, Logo Design Love, like Jacob Cass used to put out a lot of stuff. There was like all these handful of good places where I knew to look. So I'd just go on there. I'd find a good article. I'd save an image from it. I would do all this on my phone, like in the morning. I'd save the image from the page. I'd copy the URL. I'd copy the title, put it all together and post it and, you know, tag the people in that did it. And yeah, I just do that every day. And sometimes I'd write my own stuff and put that in. But in general, most of the time, it was just Google searching content and sharing that.
And that's how you would build community and build relationships, slowly just sharing other people's stuff.
Yeah, and commenting on other people's things.
And taking the initiative to engage. I think there's so much gold baked into this story that I'm just trying to like extract as little one-liner nuggets for people to be like, yeah, you're telling your story, but there's so many good things that you're doing that I don't think people understand, like the daily show up routine over time and giving value and putting something out there that people actually could care about or find some substance in that still aligns with like what you're interested in. You know, it's slow. It's a slow build. I love your story.
Yeah, but I've been blown away by the two or three opportunities that come up each year. So early on, like being invited to be on the jury for an award, and I was judging work from like moving brands. It was big brands. I was reading these case studies and stuff. I had access to their proper entries, which was incredible. And early on, because it was new for me and I was all excited, I went to the in-person judging things and you get to know people. And I remember at the awards event, I met Simon Manship from someone. I got to know him in person, which is an incredible opportunity in its own right. And another thing is because I started to get known for sharing logo design content early on. I think it was like in the first couple of years, I got invited to be a judge on Logoland, which blew my mind. And so I got to know Bill Gardner. Like when I knew Bill really well. I used to watch, I used to read his trend report every year. To me, he was like some kind of god. And I remember when he called me and we had like an hour long conversation, and now I see him as a friend. And it's just been phenomenal, like things like that. And if I didn't keep doing all this stuff, I wouldn't even be on this podcast now. This podcast now is an example of one of those opportunities. And that's all pretty much come off the back of posting on social media. It becomes like a domino effect. Like you keep knocking these things down. You just do gradual things.
The more you show up, the more opportunities will come your way. So we got started around 2012-ish, 2014, you really started gaining traction when you got that award. When were you able to first take that part-time shift to pursue Logo Geek part-time and then your day job part-time?
Okay, so this was a drag. Logo Geek was doing really well quite early on. So when I say early on, like say like 3 or 4 years after doing all these bits and pieces, I was getting, I'd be sat at work, my phone kept ringing, just kept ringing through the day. And it was pretty much every time I picked up, it's like, can you help me with a logo? And it's like, I can't, I'm at work. And I get inquiries. And there was times when I get like 10 inquiries come in, which is just insane. And there was a long time where I'd go to work, then I'd come home, and I'd be like, oh, I can't keep doing both. I kept saying it, can't keep doing both. Kept thinking, yeah, I need to give up one of these. And my plan as a career was just to have a job as a designer, work my way up, go work for like a London agency or something, and then keep working my way up. I didn't really, had never really thought at all that I could become my own boss. Like that was never something I ever considered quite early on. I was stuck between these two things, choosing, and I kept going home and I'd talk about home and be like, I think I need to give up one of these. I decided to give up Logo Geek. And then like, I'm like, no, I put too much work into it. I'm not giving it up. And it was like this constant for a couple of years of like, I'm too busy. This is too stressful. There's just too much going on. I can't have this stressful job and then come home and have this second stressful job that I couldn't get away from. It was, I just kept thinking, yeah, I'll give that up. But I'm not deleting the website. I'll leave it there. But it just meant that the problem didn't go away. I just had this too. And then life went on. And what really gave me the push was quite a personal thing. So my mum, she had vascular dementia and she ended up going into a home and she eventually passed away. And that was, for me, seeing her get old and being in a home with older people at the end of their life. And I think at the same time there was songs in the charts and there was videos I see online, like about, you know, you're gonna die one day. I can't remember what the song is, but there was one song that came about the time where it kind of went from, you know, you're a kid to a teenager to 20s to 30s to 40s to 50s, and then gone. And it made me think, I don't want to regret not doing something, you know, because what if I get to my 80 and I haven't done anything, you know?
You're on your deathbed and you're like, what the hell? Why didn't I do that?
Yeah. And I'd be like, why didn't I do anything? So that kind of gave me the kick that I needed. And I thought, I don't want to regret anything. And I just thought to myself, I'm just going to hand him a notice. I just made my mind up. I'm going to hand him a notice.
Because what were you making with Logo Geek at that time, if you could share any kind of transparent numbers when you were about to hand in this notice?
At that time, it was completely on the side, but say like £10,000 a year, something like that. It was okay money, but not anywhere near enough.
But you were having to say no to a lot of requests.
Yeah, I was saying no to pretty much everything that came in. I just couldn't respond to anything. So it wasn't. I could see that it was, I probably would have been okay. But I went into work, handed in my notice. I've been in this company for a long time. So I'd become like part of the furniture. Like I said, I was on the board of directors, and the owners of the company, they were gutted and pulled me into the office as they do. And one of the first things the company owner said to me, he said, would you consider part-time? It was one of the first things he said when I went in the room, and I thought, yeah, okay. Because it made sure that I still had income.
So a safety net. Yeah.
Yeah. Had guaranteed income still, but I also had time and I needed time. So we agreed that I would stay there 3 days a week. And we slightly adjusted like the type of work that I would be doing. So I would only work on like the larger projects. And yeah, I did that for nearly 3 years. But during those 3 years, I was going through lots of changes in my personal life. Because at the same time when I decided to take that jump, yeah, I also separated from a long-term relationship. So I had a lot of stuff going on, personal life. I relocated as well at that time, because I lived in Reading at that time, and the company where I worked, they had offices in a town outside Manchester, and I never really looked up north in the UK, and I think I needed to go up there for a meeting. My boss, he showed me this flat he bought, and it was like £40,000, this flat, which is just like, I asked him if I can have a look. So just to put into perspective, we was looking at properties at that time, and like a 2-bed flat in Reading was about 200,000. And this was 40,000, which is ridiculously cheap. So that kind of planted seeds about moving. So that 3 years where I was part-time, I was making all these changes at home and my personal life, like I relocated. But I also bought a house. I got in a property ladder, moved up north because it was a lot cheaper.
Did you increase your rates big time now that you opened up your schedule, in a sense, part-time now, and the demand was there? You're saying no more than you could say yes. So like rates jumped up?
Yeah, but also, sorry for going off track a little bit, but because I relocated, I was renting a place in Reading, which is just outside of London. Like it was central of the town. I could get into London in 30 minutes. I relocated. My living costs reduced huge amounts and I could keep my same job that was part-time.
So you gave yourself even a bigger raise potentially.
Yes. Yeah. So I suddenly had higher income. I could have lived comfortably off the 3-day a week salary. So financially I was comfortable at that point. So I could pretty much take on any project that I wanted and it was just extra income. But yes, early on, to talk about money again, early on, I mentioned like some of these early projects were like £50. Then I gradually increased it to about 500. And now I've done a couple of projects for a few thousand now. I probably wouldn't go below that now. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, for me, a minimum for you would be like a $5,000 project just to work with Logo Geek, you know, like
I'm not quite there.
$5,000 or oh man, I feel like you are there. Get out of your head, Ian. You got look at everything you've built. So what I really, so we built this timeline, talk about making the transition to full-time as of last year. And what I really want to provide people now is like steps that you put in place before you made that shift to full-time and like an advice or timeline you would recommend from your experience, because not many people get to take the leap on their own terms and blaze this path like you've done. Like for me, I was kind of forced into making that leap. I wasn't ready, but I was prepared because I treated my side hustle like it was my full-time grind. It was just this mindset. Every day, this is already my, it's like I had 2 day jobs, even though technically I didn't, but I treated it like that. But it's not often people are in control of when they get to risk it for the biscuit, you know, and take that self-employed full-time leap on their own terms. So when did you know it was finally time to make that time? And then we'll kind of wrap this portion up about like your recommendations for other people to make that shift.
So I suddenly had time to work on my own project. And something I started at that point was a podcast. I've always suffered from quite bad anxiety. So doing the idea of doing a podcast is horrifying. Same. It was terrifying at that point. But after my mom passed away, I had this weird, like, I'm not saying no to anything anymore. It totally changed me. I got invited to be a co-host on a podcast and I said yes. We did like 10 episodes together and I found out from that podcast, they said early on, we got a sponsor for this podcast. It's not much money, but you know, you get something at the end of it. And I thought not much money was maybe like a couple of £100. You know, I thought not much money was genuinely not much money, but it turned out for like 10 episodes, there was a sponsorship of like $5,000, which I think is a lot of money.
So really, for 10 episodes, wow. And a new podcast?
Yeah, it was a brand new podcast. How and all we did hell? Was got together, three of us, and we spoke about it. But I mean, the money was used on to pay for like show notes, to pay for hosting and stuff like that. So we got a little bit of money at the end of it, each of us. And I would have done it for free, but it was nice to get that. And then there was three of us and one of the other co-hosts, they did their own podcast with the same company as a sponsor and they got the same amount of money. And I'm like, I said to both these guys, like, do you think if I did my own thing, I could get that same amount. And I'm like, Ian, you've got like a massive following on Twitter, of course. And I'd actually been reached out by this company. I mentioned it, FreshBooks.
FreshBooks, yeah. I'm like waiting for the big old FB.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So FreshBooks actually reached out to me a few years prior to me doing a podcast. But to be honest, I ignored that email. I didn't get back to it. I didn't think it was anything worth bothering with. And after finding this out, I thought, I need my own podcast. I need to do my own podcast. And I'd actually done a couple of bits previously. So I was a co-host on those shows. But even before that, I started doing solo episodes to help with anxiety, because I had therapy to help with it. And Hit and Record kind of emulated the feeling of anxiety. So I'd done a few bits before, but I thought, yeah, maybe I can do like this interview show. And the first guest I managed to book in was Aaron Draplin. Never recorded an episode in my life. And Aaron Draplin.
Wow. It took me 4 years to get the guts to even have him on the show. So
yeah, I mean, being transparent, it didn't go very well. I had technical issues. I think the first question I asked him was, what's the weather like? That didn't go on the actual thing. My internet cut out because I didn't have very good internet. But yeah, I mean, I cobbled together an episode. Thankfully, all of Aaron's bits was all nicely recorded. So I don't know how many people know this, but basically I cut out all the bits that was good from Aaron and I re-recorded my bits in between. So it just sounded great. So there wasn't any of the anxiety there. There wasn't any of the where I messed up and so on. But yeah, that was episode one kind of cobbled together. And anyway, my point is I made another source of income from a podcast. Prior to going full-time, I'd done like 5 seasons where I'd been able to get a sponsor. And then at the end of last year, FreshBooks agreed to sponsor 6 months worth of content, 24 episodes in one go.
You've made a lot more money off your podcast in a short amount of time compared to me.
The podcast has made a fair amount of money, surprisingly, but they wrote out a check for a lot of money at the end of last year. So I had that. So I had this check coming. I hadn't been paid yet, but I knew at the end of last year I had this coming. So I had that source of income. I'd also been doing a lot of affiliate-based marketing. And I'll put some figures out there again. So fairly consistently from affiliate marketing in the last couple of years, around £1,000 a month consistently, sometimes more, sometimes less, but generally
that's solid,
decent income. So the combination of having inquiries coming in and having sponsorship coming in from the podcast and also having affiliate marketing coming in, I had a fairly predictable income. And I also, because FreshBooks paid in one go, had a safety net.
So you had all these things in place, and that's when you knew like it's time to spread my wings. And
yeah, and also personally, I'd bought a house. It was all, you know, all finally sorted. I met someone new, so I met my partner. And she'd moved in and we had the little one. And I got to this point where I know I needed to leave that job a long time ago, but I kind of kept it because it was comfortable. It was easy work. I just went in, got on with it, went home, done, got a guaranteed salary. But I had days when I'd sit there and I'd get affiliate things coming in on my email, and for doing nothing, I made more money at home.
It's the best feeling.
I made more money at home than I did in that job. And I'm like, what am I doing? I literally thought to myself, what am I doing? And I just remember, I think I went to lunch one day and I sat down with a calculator and I worked out how much money I made a day and how much money I would need to make in a week to replace that job. And I was slightly mortified by how small amount of money it was. I literally needed 2 logo projects a month to replace that job.
And the inquiries are there.
Yeah, yeah, and they were there. So I just decided, and it was after Christmas. So I had 2 weeks off over Christmas, got to spend time with the little one. And I just kept having this thing where I'd go to work and then like my partner would send me videos and photos of the little one. And I just thought, you know, I could be at home. I could watch my little one grow up. And it just felt like it was the right time for me. Even I think I could have done it a long time ago, but there was something about January where it just felt like the right thing to do, both for me personally and for that company where I worked at.
You weren't getting the full Ian.
Yeah, I mean, I was half in, half out. And also they'd started to do some restructuring. And I don't know if I was getting pushed out, but they changed the restructure and they put me, I used to be like a manager of my team, and they put me under one of the account managers, which made sense. They'd done that to free up the other directors because basically they had this issue where they become bottlenecks. And it was also that restructuring. I just thought, I think it would be better for me and for them if I just leave now, because it seemed, this restructuring just seemed like the right time for me to step away, because I've been there for over 10 years. And yeah, it just seemed like the right time in every possible way. So I took the leap and I have not regretted it at all. It's been absolutely phenomenal.
Regret probably not doing it sooner like I do, you know? Okay, well, let's pivot to rapid fire, but I want to bring kind of a question I wanted to ask, and let's summarize this, maybe 3 to 5 things. You know, what advice or what 3 to 5 things would you recommend someone from your experience, others put into play if they're considering making the full-time leap as well?
Okay, I think one of the most important things is to have a very clear goal. So read the book, The One Thing, and have this, yeah, have this somewhere out there goal, and keep walking towards your goal. Don't go off course. The moment you look at shiny pennies, you're going off course. Keep walking towards that. You will get there. Tiny actions every day get you to where you want to be. That's how success works, doing things each day. So that's number one. I think it depends on your personal situation. Like me, I have a mortgage. My partner is a stay-at-home mom. I have to make money, otherwise we're screwed. So I had a safety net. I was able to save up about 5 to 6 months worth of salary. You know, if we just did the bare minimum, we would probably be okay for about 6 months. So if for whatever reason I couldn't get any clients for 6 months, we would be okay. And if the worst happened, I would just get another job. So I knew that was an option. Also, I think prior to going full-time, I think you need inquiries coming in already. It depends what you're doing, but I'm assuming people watching this, probably graphic designers, artists, and so on. I would have a website in place with a portfolio, with case studies, and a contact page. I think you need that in place prior to taking that leap. So I've heard a lot of people speak about like the overlap technique. I think Sean West coined that term, where you don't just quit a job and then start again. That's suicide, because getting clients from nothing is hard. But if you have a website with examples of the type of work that you want to do that you can show to people, then you have a higher chance of attracting work. So I would personally get to that point where you have that, where you have equity in something so that you can build on something, very much like you did.
I overlapped hard.
You lost your job, but prior to that, you already had your own brand established. You already had something there. So you didn't just leave and have to start. You had something already that you could build upon. And I think you need that.
Mm-hmm. 5.5 years of figuring out what it was, though, from freelance to this, to this, to this, to all of a sudden coaching. Like, it was not a straight journey of all just logo design. It was all over the place.
I've worked on lots of different projects over the years. Like, prior to working on LogoGeek, I worked on loads of projects that just never went anywhere. computer games, animations, all sorts of stuff prior to focusing on logo design. And I think it's just been because I've seen it grow. I've seen it growing. Even now, there are times when I think to myself, I should start a separate agency doing this or this or this.
I should start another side hustle.
Yeah. And I'm constantly drawn back to, I should continue on this journey that I've formed for myself, because I know that what I built now is primed to create books and courses and all this sort of stuff. It's just there, ready to be created, and constantly got this in the back of my mind. It's like, no, don't start your own like Ian Padgett brand. Just focus on this.
No shiny object, man. You have an empire. I like knowing that you have your eyes set on these different channels and branches of the Logo Geek tree. Okay, I think that's really good. Just to summarize those, have that one thing that you're focusing on. Have that safety net, 5 to 6 months of salary, or I hear it for me, it was like 3 to 6 months of expenses covered. And then making sure you have demand for what you're doing, not just going out there cold, jumping into it like, screw it, you know, I'm just going to take the risk. I haven't built anything up. I don't have inquiries. I don't have leads. I'm just jumping into it. That is scary. I mean, some people, maybe it works, but for me, I'm more of like a calculated risk taker, which I think you are too.
Yeah. And I, like I said, it depends on your situation. If you happen to be at home with like parents, then use that opportunity. But if it depends on your situation, like both of us here, we need to have expenses covered.
Even in a tip to throw into, make sure you have multiple kind of streams of income could be like a bonus add. If you can build your side hustle to where you have multiple streams, it makes it a little bit easier because you know there's just not one day job source you're relying on. And that's what really helped me out too. Okay, man, maybe next time we ever get on an episode, we can just go deep on like building this and monetizing your craft so you can take the leap. I feel like that would be a killer episode in itself. My favorite one, if you were on death row, what would your last slice of pizza be?
That's so hard. I wish I remember the name of it, but there was a specific pizza that I always want my partner to buy. It's got like chicken and I'm rubbish at giving answers to this type of thing, but it's kind of like a chicken type pizza. Yeah, that would do.
That's okay. Okay. Who's your favorite Pokemon and what generation?
Probably, is it Gyarados?
Gyarados, yeah.
I got a shiny the other day.
Level 20 from that magic.
Yeah, they did this whole big event where like
nice.
Magikarp just kept popping up and popping up and popping up everywhere. And I caught about 5 shinies and evolved it. So I got the red one.
Nice. I can't play that game yet anymore. I can't pick it up yet, but mine's a generation 1 Charizard all day. It's always been my favorite. I got like 10 of those holographic generation 1, like mint conditions. So I'm sitting on a fat stack of generation 1 stuff.
My partner winds me up about it because you have to collect 400 candy. And so you have to collect loads and loads of Magikarp.
It's too much work.
But there was this one time where we was out somewhere and we was waiting for a friend and we were sat in the car. And I am like, I need one more candy. And I said, can I go for a walk? So I went for like a 2 mile walk whilst my partner was waiting in the car. And I come back and I could evolve my Magikarp. Quite excited.
A short 2 mile walk that takes about 45 minutes.
I pretty much ran it.
That's hilarious. Okay, another one. If you could have lunch with one person dead or alive, who would it be and why?
I think I would love to spend some proper time with like Sagi Haviv, talking more about his process. I found him on my podcast, but there's so much golden nuggets that he can learn.
You want more?
Yeah, you can learn a lot from him.
Okay. Do you believe in aliens or any outside life forms in our solar system?
I think it's insane to think that there isn't any form of life outside of the planet Earth. I think it's ridiculous to think that there isn't that, because the universe is so large. It's inevitable that there is life in some way.
See, that's a very logical side of it for sure. Okay. Where can people go to follow you online and support you?
Okay. So I'm pretty much everywhere now as @LogoGeek. There was a point where it wasn't like that, but now legogeek.com, legogeek.co.uk. Anyway, so on every social platform, it's just Logo Geek as one word. And I do have a box set of 6 ebooks called the Logo Designers Box Set, which is totally free to download. And it's 6 books that goes into different areas of logo design. So if you're into logo design or graphic design in any way, that should be useful for you. Yeah, it's free, but it's in exchange for an email address, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah, it's a killer, insanely valuable lead magnet. So Ian, this was great getting to finally like dive deep into your story. There's so much gold in here, and what I'm a big believer in philosophy of like teaching that slow and steady grind and doing it grassroots style and doing it right and building an audience around it and a diehard community, learning your value and charging what you're worth over time and finding new ways to monetize your gift. Like, dude, you're the spitting image of it. And I'm so grateful for your time today.
You're very welcome. It's been an honor to come on, and thanks for asking such a good question.
Of course, man. Had to return the favor. All right. Well, have some fun playing some Pokemon Go, and have a good day, brother. Peace.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
PC family, I hope you enjoyed this episode with the homie Ian Padgett of Logo Geek. Do what you do best. If you found value in what he had to say today, go blow him up right now. It's at Logo Geek on Instagram or wherever you want to follow him at, and just share with him your biggest takeaway. Ian, thanks again so much. We appreciate your time, your energy, and just your creative genius today. If this show has helped you along your creative grind, there are 2 ways you can support what we're building here. First off is by financially backing the show over at patreon.com/perspectivepodcast, like my family, Iron Bean Coffee Company, and my homie Tony Minix do. With as little as your weekly cup of coffee per each episode, you can help this show grow and continue to help compensate this team so we can take this to the next level and provide even more value. Thank you to all the Patreon supporters right now. Like this, it's so helpful, more than I could ever describe or articulate. So the second way is by subscribing or leaving a rating and review over on Apple iTunes, as well as CastBox, I'm finding. But doing it on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, this allows the show to not only grow in the arts design category, but it staples you in as an official listener of the week, like this week's listener of the week. And this one comes from Yams Grams. They title this, "This podcast will push you to do your best." And they state, "I've been listening to the Perspective podcast for 2 to 3 years now, and it's been one of my biggest pushes to follow my creative dream full time. In a COVID world, I was let go from my agency job. And thanks to the podcast, I felt ready to lean into the shakeup, give me the skills, the motivation, and more importantly, the mindset to hit the ground running. Now I'm winning big contracts, having Zoom meetings with small entrepreneurs and big community organizers. Found my niche in nonprofits and organizations that help marginalized communities. So I wake up and do what I love every single day. While not all the pieces are there, I'm confident that the puzzle is being put together slowly but surely, and that keeps me going. Thanks again, Scotty, for the push. Again, Yams Grams, and this is Bray Yam for the United States. As I sign off, I want to give a huge shout out to my podcast editor, Anya Brennan, and executive assistant, Paige Garland, video specialist, Colton Bacher, social media coordinator, Hannah Schick, and Nick Jenkins of Bluka for all the dope theme music you hear on this show. And as you finish your week off strong, I want to continue to encourage you to keep showing up, keep putting in the work, and keep creating. You got this.